Golf Today. Golf Today on a Wednesday. Damon Hack, Eamon Lynch, busy time on the calendar. Believe it or not, we got college golf. We still got pro golf. We're going to start, Eamon, by looking backwards just a little bit. It's the fall schedule on the PGA Tour. Starting in beautiful Napa Valley, California. World number one Scottie Scheffler won on the PGA Tour for a sixth time in 2025, getting the better of Ben Griffin. You got Stephen Fisk shooting that final round 65, including four birdies in his final five holes to win the Sanderson Farms Championship. Became the fourth rookie to win on the PGA Tour this season and took home that chicken to boot. How about this week? PGA Tour is in Japan for the Bay Current Classic. Programming note, impending weather in the area due to a nearby typhoon, so tee times have been moved up for round number one. Coverage will be on Golf Channel tonight, 9 p.m. Eastern time. Wyndham Clark, Max Homa, Siwoo, Hideki, Collins, Xander, Adam Scott, and Sahith Tagala, just to name a few.
And meanwhile, over on the DP World Tour, John Rahm is headlining the field in his home country's National Open. The tour's best tee it up in Spain. Rahm is a three-time winner of that event. Victories came 2018, 2019, and 2022. Let's hear from the two-time major champion.
I go from, it's possibly two of the most emotional weeks for me, right? Being part of a Ryder Cup is something so unique, so special, especially winning away. It's incredible. It's an incredible feeling. But then coming to Spain, an event that matters so much to me, hoping to win for the fourth time, hard to put it into words, right? It may not be the biggest event in the world, but to me is one of the biggest.
And what's it like been returning to Europe after winning that away Ryder Cup?
It is very weird being congratulated for something that I didn't just do myself, right? Like when I get thank yous and congratulations, I wish we were all together because we all deserve it, right? It wasn't just me. I only contributed 3 points out of 15, right? So, and all of those three with a partner. So it's an odd feeling, but it's very nice to be able to give that to European golf.
And having a home event so close after doing that, is that a huge positive for you in your game? What can you do this week?
I would say after watching Bob McIntyre win in Scotland, I would say it's a huge positive, yeah. Yeah. From going from having the crowd against us to having everybody cheering for me is going to be very special. Massive difference, massive juxtaposition, but beautiful in a different way, right? So I'm looking forward to it, looking forward to hopefully getting that fourth Spanish Open. And again, hoping to actually just perform well in front of this crowd. They've been so good to me. They've been so supportive that the least I can do is give it my best shot, and hopefully I'm there on Sunday to win it.
Well, that's just some of what's going on in the world of golf. Let's put together another Golf Today roundtable with Golf Channel senior writers Rex Hoggard and Ryan Lavner. Rex, I'll start with you on the basis that you're the more mature of the two of you right now. I want to go back to something else that's happening at a far-flung tournament. Colin Morikawa is playing in Japan, and overnight he rejected any suggestion that his call for the fans at Bethpage to create chaos was the word that he used, that in any way that contributed to the scene that eventually unfolded there. I'm inclined to think it's a bit of a stretch to say that the words of one player in that moment kind of contributed to what was marketed that way for a dozen years. Where do you fall on this whole kind of argument about what responsibility the player's words had ahead of the Ryder Cup?
Well, first, Eamon, thank you for mature. You could have gone a lot of different ways with that. Old would have worked just as well. So, but I do appreciate it. And I do want to point out that Colin Morikawa also said that the crowd clearly crossed the line and that the behavior that we saw at Bethpage was not acceptable. I guess I keep falling back on the same idea that every time someone either with the PGA of America or one of the U.S. players like Colin Morikawa referenced something they had said beforehand, and I think Colin said he was just trying to get the energy up out of the crowd. He talked about chaos. We've heard that a lot. They're conflating those words with what we actually ended up with, and I think it was always inevitable that the crowd was going to be over the top. Even if the U.S. would have played well, I argue, for those first 2 days, I think the crowd would have ended up doing much the same thing and would have gone over the line just like we realized. I don't think that either Colin Morikawa or anyone involved in Team USA had any idea that it was going to go over the top like that, but they probably should have.
Well, Lav, if the Ryder Cup has too much chaos, the President's Cup is lacking chaos, and some would say lacking juice as well. The Americans have won 10 straight. We spoke to Jeff Ogilvie yesterday. I reminded him he has no players in the top 15, just two in the top 30. If the Americans should win for an 11th straight time next year in Chicago, what is the future of this event?
I don't know if there is one. I mean, I'm not sure you can look at any golf fan right now and say, are you excited for the Presidents' Cup just because of what we've seen in the lopsided results? Just one win back in 1998, just one tie back in 2003. The last, at least on U.S. soil, have all been blowouts. Remember back in 2017, they almost won the event on Saturday when it's supposed to be a four-day event. Eamon and Damon, you and I have covered a lot of these, and there's always like this simmering frustration on Sunday night and what can be done differently. The PGA Tour, you know, oversees this event, oversees both of these teams. And when you look at the tweaks that have or have not been done, they have not made a single tweak to the scoring adjustment since 2015. I know they want to differentiate the President's Cup and the Ryder Cup. And that's why they're not going to 28 points. They have 30 points. That's actually down from 34 like they had to. But there has to be a way to level the playing field, because you look at the talent disparity, it is stark. Just put it in line, put the President's Cup in line with the Ryder Cup, make it 28 points, and just see if you can have a more competitive result, because right now I think fans are going to have a really hard time getting invested in this product that's been so lopsided.
Rex, one of the questions I put to Jeff Ogilvie yesterday as the international captain is whether or not the President's Cup would benefit if the PGA Tour did not own all of it, if the international team was sold to some other entity or individual where they can make their own resourcing decisions, their own decisions on captains and whatever else, who they want to play on their team, rather than just simply have every decision about this tournament for both teams come out of the same office in Pontevedra. He seemed to think that was a conversation that is worth having it, not obviously before next year's President's Cup, but subsequent to that. Do you buy into that argument that it's lacking a certain kind of independence from the tour in terms of the other side of the equation here?
Absolutely. You look at what Lav just laid out. I can point to at least two separate international captains in Ernie Els and Nick Price who made the argument for fewer points because, as Lav pointed out correctly, that the international team, at least on paper, is not as deep as the U.S. team, and that fewer points would allow an international captain to maybe hide some players that weren't up to par in those matches. And yet, the PGA Tour continues to push back, and you wonder, this is a product for the PGA Tour. Why wouldn't you want it to be as competitive as possible? You point to the Ryder Cup, and until Sunday afternoon, at least, it has been largely competitive, and that's why it is so popular. It's why it's probably the biggest event in all of sports. I'll go one step further. Why wouldn't you just let the DP World Tour take over the international side of the President's Cup? They're a strategic partner of the PGA Tour, and they have proven time and time again that they're really good at these team events. And even talking with Jeff Ogilvie yesterday, we met with him before he came on the show with you guys, and the idea being that Jeff has already started picking away at Luke Donald, already started to try to get his ideas. So if they have some sort of secret code that would make this a more compelling product, absolutely.
Well, let's look at the international side, Lav. The thought was for the Americans that the President's Cup was additive, chance to breed captains and vice captains and let the players kind of see what a little taste of pressure is going to be like maybe in an off year from the Ryder Cup. But are you seeing a scenario where the President's Cup perhaps is taking away from the Americans when they try to get ready for the Ryder Cup? Is that possible?
I don't really understand the argument, Damon, that there is cup fatigue on the part of the Americans. I actually think it's so beneficial for them to have this proving ground, this testing ground, an ability to get all of the 12 players together and have the situation where you're testing out pairings and you're developing a continuity that the Americans have really struggled to bring year to year, cup to cup, President's Cup to Ryder Cup. And I specifically think when you think about this 2025-2026 changeover, and look, a lot can happen in a year's time, there are not a whole lot of, you know, proven partnerships that the Americans can rely on in 12 months time at Medina. So being able to test them, getting the data dialed in, you know, understanding and developing a strategy that then they can take from Medina to 2027 in Ireland, I think is hugely beneficial, and it may actually be one of the reasons why the internationals have struggled, particularly look at the PGA Tour schedule. There's no match play event anymore. And so I really do believe it's beneficial for the Americans and might actually be detrimental for the internationals that they don't get that opportunity on the other years.
Rex, speaking of losing strategies, last week, Liv's UK arm published its financials, which detailed a $590 million loss in 2024 alone, bringing to about $1.4 billion the losses for that specific entity in 3 years. And that doesn't include everything they've lost in the United States, where half of their schedule is played. It doesn't include everything that was spent in 2025. Is there a reckoning coming at some point? Because conservative estimates suggest well north of $5 billion has been torched at this point. Or are the bots to be believed that the Saudis can and will continue to fund this forever?
That just seems like a ridiculous amount of money. It seems like you and I are just talking about monopoly money at this point. You're just kind of throwing it around, and clearly the product isn't where they want it right now, either in the United States or even internationally. You can point to a couple of events, the one in Adelaide, Australia. There has been success there, but you don't have the TV deal in the United States that you probably wanted. You don't have the corporate partnerships that you need for each one of those events, and it doesn't seem like you're heading in a direction where you're going to be able to close any of those types of deals. You would think at some point the public investment fund would get tired of losing this money. You'd have to look at the bottom line, but by all indications, it seems like they're in it for the long haul. But as you pointed out, that's a staggering amount of money, and you have to believe at some point they expect a return, and you can't envision, you can't tell me that that's on the horizon. You can't explain to me this is what it's going to look like 10 years from now, and this is how you're going to get your investment back. I think eventually it has to stop.
Speaking of staggering, Lav, we spoke to the World Golf Hall of Fame member, former U.S. Ryder Cup captain Lanny Watkins yesterday. You said the PGA of America should consider removing the 2033 PGA from Bethpage State Park, considering what happened at the Ryder Cup. Does he have a point, or is that not quite addressing fan behavior as a whole across the board, across the country, and singling out a little bit of mouthy Long Islanders, as it were?
Yeah, I think that might be a little bit reactionary. Look, it was vile, it was crude, it was vulgar, but it wasn't necessarily unsafe. You know, the players didn't feel unsafe, other spectators didn't necessarily feel unsafe. I think that point, if it got to like Woodstock 99 at the 2025 Ryder Cup, then maybe you could be having this conversation. It does look, Bethpage does have a history of this sort of behavior. Think back to the heckling in 2002. Even Brooks Koepka on his way to a runaway victory said that he was being jeered and booed and told that he was choking in the 2019 PGA Championship. You look at the upcoming events, the 2028 Women's PGA Championship is going to be at Bethpage. You don't think that that tournament would engender the same sort of deep emotions. The PGA Championship typically does not engender that sort of deep emotion. The golf course does work for a variety of reasons, not least of which is the location. You just hope that, unlike what happened in the run-up to the Ryder Cup, you can have an adult stand up and say, look, we love New York crowds, we love the energy, we love the atmosphere you bring, but you have to be respectful. And anyone who chooses to cross the line is going to be dealt with severely and dealt with swiftly. We did not have that in the run-up to the Ryder Cup. I believe that should be the point in messaging for the PGA of America heading to that 2033 PGA Championship. Instead.
Rex, do you want to take a moment to tell the kid why he's wrong? I mean, he grew up in New York, albeit closer to Canada than to Manhattan, but he's just made the argument why Bethpage doesn't work, because every single time they've gone there, regardless of the event and regardless of whether or not there was a national element,
isolated,
it's the same mouthy
crowd.
It's not an isolated incident. It's repeated every single time they go there. Rex, where are you on that?
And it's repeated at every single sporting event in the city. If you go to a Jets game, as awful as that team is, you're also going to hear the
Justin
awful
Fields
things
stinks.
Said from the crowd. That's true. He certainly does stink. And let's hope the Knicks have a little bit better season. But that's what you're going to get. When you go back to the decision to go to Bethpage and having an opportunity now to maybe revisit some of these ideas, the reason they went there, yeah, the location is great. Yes, Bethpage from a logistics standpoint is a fantastic venue. They went there for the crowds. They went there because they wanted this electricity. No one could have anticipated this, but that was what they were always going to get. It's not going to change just because it's the PGA Championship. It may be a little bit less subdued. It may not be quite as gross or uncomfortable as it was at the Ryder Cup just because of the feelings that that event brings out. But yes, it's always going to be like this. So the PGA of America and anyone else that wants to hold an event there has to make a decision that no, you're not going to be able to stand up, try to be the adult in the room, as Lav would like to say, because they're not going to listen to you. They're just going to boo you off the stage.
The Jets are winless, and the U.S. Ryder Cup team looking for answers as well. Rex and Lav, thank you so much. Appreciate it.
Thanks, guys.
And Hank joins us now from French Lick, Indiana, one of the toughest golf courses on tour all year, where the finale has been played this year. Hank, great to see you. Do you approach this week with a little bit of relaxation because you know where you're going to play next year? Or how tough is it to keep your foot on the gas on a week like this?
Yeah, you know, you always want to put your best foot forward. You always want to prepare for the event as if you wanted to win. But it is nice knowing in the back that you do have that celebration on Sunday night coming, where no matter how you play, no matter the breaks, good or bad, that you get, that, you know, the goal that you had to start the year is already been accomplished.
Eamon mentioned it. You won the first start of the season. What are the benefits of that, and what are the challenges of opening the season with a victory?
I don't think there's any challenges, man. You know, it's just benefits that you get to start the year off with that bit of that point head start, if you would, on the rest of the guys playing out here, and you get, you don't lose points as the season goes. You know, they say, you know, touchdowns are scored in the first quarter and same as they are in the fourth quarter, and same out here. You know, that win counts, and to be able to get it done at the beginning of the year, I'm super thankful. And to have the start, really, the first 3-4 months of the season that I did, allowed me to really, you know, enjoy this back half of the year, knowing that my tour card was locked up.
We often talk, Hank, about the difficulties or challenges in transitioning from the Korn Ferry Tour back into the PGA Tour. You've basically experienced both sides of it. What was it like going from being such a regular figure on the PGA Tour back to the Korn Ferry Tour? And what is that feeling like now, having worked your way back?
Coming back down was, it was a check. You know, you obviously had a bad year on the PGA Tour in order to lose your status and come back down to the Korn Ferry Tour. And you needed to regroup. I was thankful last year. It was another down year for me, but I snuck into the Tour Championship here at French Lick as the 75th guy. I was the last man in. Used that in the off season as momentum, if you would, just to, you know, a little win to get here to the Tour Championship, retain my status. It worked hard, and it really propelled me forward to my win at the beginning of the year. And going back to PGA Tour, you know, how often do you get to, you know, start a year with 5 years experience? You know, my first time on tour in a couple of years, and I already have 5 years under my belt of playing out there. So it's special. I'm really thankful to be going back, and I know it's going to be a great year.
Hank, you've become a sublime putter. You were 123rd in putting average last year. You're 44th in putting average this year. That is a huge jump. In what ways have you improved there? What have you worked on to produce those kind of numbers?
I've been working with a guy back in Jacksonville, Ramon Varescu, and we've been doing really a lot of start line work, making sure I'm starting out, hitting my straight putts where I'm looking, and allowing myself to, you know, see these balls go in the hole from 5-8 feet in, on the practice green. And so it's a simple drill, you know, it's simple setup that I have when I do my putting work, and it's, you know, carried a lot of weight. I've been really happy with how I've been putting this year.
Would you like to take a moment, Hank, to acknowledge all of the mental game advice that I've given you over the years and how much that's contributed
to
your success?
You're breaking up a little bit. I didn't hear. Did you say something?
Yeah, it's convenient how that always works. All of my clients have the same thing. I wanted to ask you, Hank, it's tougher to graduate from the Korn Ferry Tour this year. There are fewer cards. There are going to be fewer cards to keep on the PGA Tour this year and going forward. Are you a fan of what you see out there in terms of the streamlining, for want of a better term, of the access?
It is what it is. I mean, ultimately, it is not my decision to who gets status, who doesn't get status, or how many players that we're going to have on the PGA Tour. But I knew going into the season that there was never going to be a better time to be on the PGA Tour than this upcoming season. And I really wanted to be a part of it. you know, next year the Korn Ferry Tour is going to be even stronger than it was this year. And every subsequent year, you're going to have better and better players coming and playing this tour in order to get a PGA Tour card. So in my head, as soon as I could get up there, this, especially this year, I knew it was going to be kind of the year you want to be on tour, with how much smaller the fields are going to be, how many fewer guys you're going to be playing against, and hopefully be able to stay in the top 100.
Hank, you're a great golfer, but you were also a great baseball player. One year hitting 407 in my former home of Winter Park for Trinity Prep. Was it a coin flip for you? Did you consider pursuing baseball? Florida State, great baseball school. You clearly can turn on a fastball.
No. I'm under 6 foot. I'm slow. There's no chance I would have been able to play even Division I baseball. You know, it was the first sport I played. It was my first love. But ultimately, I knew I was going to play golf at the next level, or wanted to play golf at the next level, and made that decision in high school. And, you know, I miss baseball. I still enjoy watching it. I was never going to be able to take it further than probably the high school level.
Are you a better golfer heading back to the PGA Tour than you feel you were when you left the PGA Tour a couple of years ago, Hank? And if so, in what way?
Better golfer? I'd like to think so. You know, you like to say, think that you've improved or become better version of yourself, if not just a better player over, it's been 9-10 years coming up playing professionally. I'd like to think so. You know, I have a really good team around me that I love being with. I have, you can't trade in the 5 years of experience I've already had on tour. You know, I've already done that, which I'm thankful for. And, you know, am I better? Maybe. I'd like to think so.
You also love music, from what I understand, and once went to an Ed Sheeran concert in Montreal that kept you up all night back in 2017. What do you recall about that week?
Yeah, I was with a girlfriend at the time, my wife now, and we were, I guess it would have been our first full year out of school. We had barely any money, but we had some, and invited her up to go to one event. She saw that Ed was performing in downtown Montreal. She said, "Oh, let's go." So, sure, why not? We'll book it. And of course, you don't know your tee time until, you know, the week of the tournament. You know, it turns out you have that 7:05, 7:15 in the morning tee time, and you're at the concert until midnight. So, you know what? Let's see how this goes. Turned out to be a great week. My first professional win. And obviously, that's not how I would have prepped for the event if I had to draw it out all over again. But I mean, the results you can't argue with.
Heard some great music, and you got the girl. That is a great week in Montreal. Congrats, buddy. Look forward to seeing you on the PGA Tour next year. Enjoy the week in Indiana.
Thank you, Damon.
We're joined now by Ben Grande, who is the executive director of the Congaree Foundation and in charge of this global initiative. Ben, explain for us, if you could, exactly what the Congaree Global Initiative is.
Yeah, gentlemen, great to be with you, and appreciate the opportunity. The Congaree Global Golf Initiative started alongside Congaree Golf Club and the foundation in 2017. And, you know, it's really an opportunity to take young people who have a goal to attend college, an opportunity to explore playing college golf, and then walk alongside them across a 10-year journey to provide the resources they need, everything beginning with college readiness and college placement, through their college career, making sure they've got the resources and support that they need to graduate on time and with a degree. And then really the uniqueness of the program is our continued support post-college, where we utilize a network of Congaree ambassadors, friends, and supporters who come alongside these young people to help mentor, help build a professional network so they can get a jump start early career. So it's really a program that's working with young people from, you know, 15, 16 years old all the way up through 25, 26. So when you see the 220-something people we have involved, it ranges from a 14, 15-year-old who joined us just this year. But we're working equally alongside a 25, 26-year-old who's now out in the workforce.
Ben, I want to ask you a little bit more about the program. How granular do you get? How much FaceTime is there, for example, between the candidates, the students, and the mentors? How much FaceTime, how much kind of on the ground, hands dirty, things are happening for these young people beside these business leaders and kind of titans of industry?
Yeah, I appreciate that. You know, we've got a wonderful team of college academic and athletic advisors. So from day one, when these high school students get involved, we're working with them, getting to know where they are academically, athletically. And we're working with them on everything on the academic side, from SAT, ACT prep, up to course selection, making sure that they're college ready and on track to find their best potential fit. On the athletic side, we're working with them on putting together a college golf resume, promotional video. And many of our students are sending letters and communications out to 100, 150 college golf coaches with the support of our team, helping them navigate that communication, navigate those opportunities with the ultimate fit at the beginning of this program to help each young person find not just one opportunity, but multiple opportunities academically and athletically, financially, that make the most sense so that they can make their best college fit.
What kind of candidates are you looking for here for the program, Ben? I mean, how expansive is the criteria you apply for admissions?
Yeah, great question. So we're at an important time right now in the calendar where we are currently hosting our nomination period. And this is an opportunity for anybody and everybody to just come alongside and say, hey, I know a family, an individual, an organization even, that may know young people that could benefit from this program. So we encourage you to go to their website, learn a little bit more. There's also a nomination link where basically you can nominate a young person for this opportunity, and self-nominations are welcomed. In terms of a profile of a candidate we're looking for, typically somebody with 2 to 3 years of high school left. So when you're looking at joining our 2026 class, you would be a 2027, 28, or 29 graduate. Somebody who has a personal goal to attend college. And then the athletic potential to explore playing college golf. College golf isn't the end-all, be-all for this. Our first priority is to make sure that we find an educational fit and these young people get a college degree. In terms of other profiles of the candidate, is just finding a family that could use some additional support across this process. We know there's hundreds and thousands of young people out there that fit this profile, that college golf is a potential goal, and their families just don't know where to turn to, or don't have the resources to invest in the resources that this program can provide.
Ben, it's incredible work that you're doing, seeing these young people start at a really important time of life and seeing all the way through college and beyond. We appreciate you joining us on this Wednesday. Thank you so much.
Yeah, great. Thank you, guys. Appreciate the opportunity.
Nota Begay III, great to see you in New Mexico. Had dinner last night at the Met Golf Riders Association. One of the guys says American kids don't play match play enough. Why was it important for you to have the NB3 be a match play event?
Well, DHAC, great to be with you. I'll let you in on a little secret. I started this event so I could actually work from my home and sleep in my own bed. I think match play is so compelling. I think it's a wonderful format to produce some high drama. We had some kids do some interviews after their rounds yesterday, just talking about how every single hole has a certain element of pressure to it. And obviously, we do get some closure in most of these matches where we see players do some great things under pressure. And yesterday, we saw some players do some not so great things under pressure. And that's the beauty of sport. When it's all said and done, they are young kids and they're trying to produce some great results under some pretty tough circumstances. But yesterday was a great start to the event. We're so proud to be broadcasting it here from the Santa Ana Reservation.
What's been your experience so far this week, Nota? What or who has actually impressed you the most?
Well, we had a great story, a local story here, Aiden Kraft. He went to high school here at Cibola High School just down the road in Albuquerque. Wasn't a highly recruited junior golfer. I picked up the phone. I called Casey Martin. I said, hey, we've got a kid here from New Mexico who I think could do some good work for you up in Eugene. And they started talking. He finally got on the roster and has been a mainstay on Oregon's roster these last 4 years. He's in his final year. This is the first time he's ever played a collegiate event back here in New Mexico. And it's something that Casey and my coach did when we both played at Stanford. Casey was my teammate at Stanford. We played on the national championship team together. But Wally Goodwin brought me back to New Mexico with our team. It was Tiger and Casey and Will Yanagisawa, among others, that came back and got a chance to play in front of a home crowd. And it was great to see Casey do that. And not only that, Aiden's gone undefeated, some pretty convincing wins in his first two matches so far. So it's great. It's been great to watch.
Noda, you've traveled the world. You play, you broadcast, you host, you give back. The NB3 Foundation turns 20 years old this year. What are you most proud of?
The look in the kids' eyes when they are playing soccer or playing golf, and the look that parents give me. Parents, not always the case, but caregivers. Sometimes it's an aunt or an uncle or a grandparent when they come up and just extend their gratitude for the programs, for the opportunity, for the resources. We try and equip these young kids at the MB3 Foundation with a strong sense of identity, a strong understanding of what it is to live a fun and healthy life. And we just try and make this part of their life as positive as possible. And we got a wonderful staff over at MB3. They're very much dedicated to our children and our families. And I always put the emphasis is that's who we're serving. You know, the money we raise and the proceeds that people are very generous in supporting us with go into these families and these kids. And we're just going to continue to get better, hopefully for, you know, 20 more years.
No, it would be very easy for you to just lend your name to an event and stay home. But that's not what you do. You're deeply involved in this. You've had so many kids go through your own junior programs. Why actually put your own time and investment and sweat equity into it? Because a lot of people will actually just kind of be the front man without actually taking on the labor.
Well, I look at it and it gives me a sense of purpose. And I think we can truly impact these young people's lives. I know many of my colleagues through the sport of golf, Tiger in particular, through his learning centers, Jordan Spieth, Justin Rose, all do wonderful work on behalf of their special interests. And for us here, it's these Native American kids coming from pretty disadvantaged programs. And if I can make an investment of my own time and use my platform to help bring awareness, to help raise money, to help benefit them in some way, shape, or form where they look back on this experience in the MB3 match play or their experience with our NB3 Junior Golf Initiative and say that was an impactful thing in my life. And I don't really care whether they make the PGA or the LPGA Tour. I want them to be responsible citizens within their community that have an ability to identify a chance to give back in their own right down the road. And that's what we aim for with the work.
And obviously the teams are competing and trying to make as many birdies as possible. But how important is it for you that they learn your story and the story of New Mexico as a state, the story of Native Americans and the journey that they've taken in this country? It's more than the birdies and bogeys this week, isn't it?
It really is. We certainly try not to hit them over the head with it, but there is some discussions around the culture and the history of this particular community, the state of New Mexico, which I'm very proud of. And we just try and make it a very well-rounded experience. And I've had a couple of coaches over the last couple years call me after the fact and saying, hey, the golf was great, but it was secondary to what my kids learned about Native American communities, some of the adversity that they face. And, you know, we had a special opening prayer that was done in the Karis language, which nobody but me and a handful of others understood, but it was just a way for them to express something that they're so very proud of, which is their home. They're happy to host, and they're really 100% behind what we're trying to do with this match play event in attracting the top programs. I mean, we've had Texas, Stanford, Oregon come in here to compete, and this week we got Texas A&M women who are doing a fantastic job early in this season. So it's a nice mix of everything that I love about the game.
Noda, it's always great to catch up with you at a great event. And I know you're looking over your shoulder at those kids wondering if you could have taken them when you were the pride of Stanford. But there's still game in you at this stage. We still have some hope.
I have a little bit of hope, too, but I'm running out of time.
It's the hope that kills us. Always great. Noda, thanks for the time.